Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? As we look through a house full of junk and try to pick out the junk we like. Oh, it's wonderful to explore with you. And I'm glad that you're joining me, because doing it together makes it even better. Movements are everywhere. And there are many different types: Swiss, bowel, political. But we are going to focus on art movements, and in particular, one you have probably never heard of, but whose influence can be felt in many aspects of our daily lives. The Sorites movement, or as most of us call it, heap art. How do you know when art is art? The same way you know when a bald man is bald or a heap of rice is a heap. In other words, vaguely. Most of us are familiar with the paradox of the heap. If I had a heap of rice and I take away one grain, I still have a heap, yes? But what if I take away two grains? Three? At what point do I no longer have a heap? Many also instinctively know that the same thing can be said of art. How do I know when something is simply a created object and when it's art? For centuries, we erred on the side of the obvious. Art was that which was undeniably heap-like. But that is too easy, and ignores the strange situation that causes the paradox in the first place. Are there endeavors, objects on the extremes of our graph that are both not art and art at the same time? And does that ever shift or change? The answer is in here. This is a Neanderthal skull. Our hominid cousins aren't with us any longer, because their wonderful variations for being an ape were not what the environment would favor at some point. For life to survive, it has to put as many variations out there as possible, so that its chance of surviving when circumstances change is at the least slight. And those variations are the whole key to our art movement. The mutations don't have to be perfect. Just good enough for the moment. Life, you see, rewards just good enough for the moment. It rewards variation. It wants to be a heap.
I will destroy you.
Get its leg.
It doesn't have legs.
Then what's that?
Someone else's leg.
You will pay for your evil.
What did you just throw at it, a fork?
I don't know. I thought it might hit an off switch or something.
Hey, guys, what are you doing?
Destroy the false gods.
Oh, we're fighting a thing.
What is that, a tiny Dalek? No, I made a golem. It doesn't look like a golem.
It's not traditional. Basically, he animated an old dehumidifier. Well, it could be a humidifier. Anyway, it's angry.
You shall be destroyed for the horror of your creation. By the horror that is your creation.
Yeah, well, no.
Throw another saucepan at it, Butch.
Why is it angry? It resents its creation. Everything you give life to, from Frankenstein monsters to golems to appliances, quickly turns ingrate. Hey, life is hard. Sorry. Lucky for you, it's temporary.
Hey, Don, what are you painting?
A house.
Of course. Looks great.
Thank you.
You are such a good artist.
Oh, I wouldn't call this art.
I think you're selling yourself short. These colors, for instance, they're genuinely elevating my mood. And the visible brushstrokes give it that vibrant feel, too.
Gosh, Lou, that's nice of you to say.
Yeah, if art is something that inspires or intrigues or creates possibilities, then you have more than accomplished that. That, my friend, is art.
Lou, I very much appreciate that. To me, I'm just painting.
No, you're creating. So, is the door dry? Can I go in?
The door is still a little tacky, but if you just touch the knob, you're fine.
Great! Hey, when you're done painting the house, come join me for coffee.
I will. Just one more shutter to do.
I do my thing and put it out there. Like free tools. Like a table of free tools that other folks can take as they need them. Some are obviously useful, like a hammer. Other tools seem strange and useless and pointless because I imagined them while dreaming of tasks that do not yet and may never exist. Still, they belong there, with the rest of the tools, right next to the hammer.
We are all walking along a wall. My job is to stand behind you and yell at you to keep going. You see, some people are so afraid to fall that they jump. But that's stupid. You will fall eventually. Do not jump. Gravity does not need your help. Just keep going. We might need you at some point. No one is expendable because nothing is predictable. You are a possibility. We need all possibilities.
Something seems different in here. Did you replace the drapes or something?
Butchie, where's all the furniture and the appliances?
And the walls.
I turned the place into a museum.
A museum?
Yeah, you're the one always prattling on about art. I figured we'd put our money where our mouth is and make the place into a museum.
That's a great idea, Butch.
No, it's really not a great idea.
I don't know. It's sort of cozy, like the Louvre.
It's not. It's empty and kitchenless and weirdly bigger. I may have employed time travel technology to increase our interior space while retaining the same exterior footprint.
Wow.
It's impressive, I'll give you that. But I think we might miss the fridge.
And the coffee maker.
All that is in the museum cafe now, so I got rid of your coffee mugs. So if you want one, I suggest the museum gift shop, which carries the ones with the museum logo and another that says, "Coffee is art."
So, we live in a museum now, like the Douglas Adams family.
Butchie, ignoring for a moment that you destroyed our house and replaced it with a museum, what's the theme of this museum?
What do you mean?
I mean, for instance, right here. This is a foot-long piece of furring strip with the words, "This end up as of now," and you have it mounted on the wall like it's art.
It is art. I got it from my great-uncle's house when he died. He used it to prop open a window that had a broken sash.
And it's art because...
It's because he added the phrase, "as of now," to this end up.
So?
So, he weirdly felt the need to fix the instruction in time as well as space. He described the orientation he wanted and the time frame on a repurposed piece of detritus.
Makes you think.
Exactly. But it didn't take any skill or effort.
It did, though. Not to manipulate the materials, but to create the idea, and to include the seemingly meaningless reference to time elevates it to a surprising and extraordinary object. And extraordinary objects can inspire us and lead to our own new and original ideas.
Now, this looks like a real painting.
It is. It's a portrait of Cadwallader Ringgold. Hans painted it.
Not bad.
Well, not super good. Not particularly accomplished or anything.
He painted it because they're both from Baltimore.
Hans is the Baron of Baltimore.
And?
And? Maybe it's the subject matter and the circumstances that made this created object interesting. Look, this is a museum of ideas, not of aesthetic perfection. These works are catalysts and instigators and precursors. This is a museum of sparks, not fire. There are plenty of museums for works we consider the best, but ideas are often hidden in a big clump of suck. Just like a gemstone may lurk in a hunk of rock.
I don't know.
Look, two brothers were looking to make money selling aluminum.
The one brother had this idea to get a couple of abandoned fishing boats, the aluminum kind, and sell them for scrap. It's a lot in one place, a big score. Meanwhile, the other brother was picking up and saving every tiny piece of aluminum he came across.
Are they still looking for aluminum? Because I'm thinking of selling my 70s beer can collection.
Not the point.
I think I see. Oh, what's this?
Ah, this is called Painted House. Don did it.
Hey, Hardy.
Yeah?
What are you thinking?
Well, I don't know, because now I'm thinking about your question.
What do you think you were thinking?
I don't know, because I forgot what I was thinking.
Thinking's like that.
Not all heaps are alike. An anthill is nothing compared to some of the garbage heaps in populous areas. Not all heaps even contain like objects, making it even more confusing. And there is one heap in particular that dwarfs nearly all the competitors. It is old, it is enormous, it is mysterious. It is the Great Heap.
This is the Great Heap. 29,000 miles high, 24,000 miles wide. It seems like it must contain everything. But we don't even know a fraction of what's in it. We know what to call it when it's a heap, but we don't even know what it contains exactly. What it's made up of. At the very least, it stimulates our imagination. At the most, it contains all the answers to all the questions that we've ever had.
But what are our questions? They change all the time. If you asked how to iron clothes 100 years ago, the answer would be different than it is now. Imagine asking, how do I relieve my headache 1,000 years ago? The answer might literally lead to holes in your head. So if questions change all the time, we must always be looking for new answers, sometimes in different and unusual places.
Thanks for inviting me to your tea ceremony, Lou.
Of course. I am honored to share it with you.
Everything looks lovely.
Thank you.
Now, you never mentioned which tradition this comes from.
Oh my gosh, I didn't. That's crazy. I'm so sorry. Could you hand me that towel?
Oh, sure.
Thanks. Shall we begin?
Oh, okay.
I'll explain everything I'm doing, since you've never seen me make tea before.
Well, I've seen you dunk a tea bag of Cozy Cup Betty Time tea.
Oh, that's very different.
Oh, I'm sure.
Now, the first thing I do is thank and gently pet the teapot. Thank you for being a vessel, unbroken and the perfect size. Now, you say thank you.
Thank you.
No, go ahead and say it right into the teapot.
Oh, all right. Thank you, teapot.
All right, that's good. Now, we bring out a second teapot.
Oh, what's that for?
Backup, but also to keep this teapot company. There's two of us, one of them. Now it's even. Two pots and two people.
All right, that makes sense.
It does? Anyway, now we examine and smell the tea.
Oh, that's lovely. What is it?
It's roasted green tea from Kyoto.
Oh, I love that.
We set that next to the pot here. And now we arrange and play the spoons.
We play the spoons?
Yes. You take them in your hand, like this, and we play them. I'll go first. Spoon man! Play the spoons with your hands. Now you try.
Oh, all right.
That's close enough. Now comes the heating of the water, which I already did to save time. First, we pour it into the pot. Like that.
Notice how the empty pot sort of resonated when you tap it, but now that it's full of water, it doesn't.
Oh, that seems like a metaphor.
Don't read too much into this. I'm sorry. It's really just a physical property of the materials.
True.
We now offer the second pot some water, so it doesn't feel weird or left out, but it turns us down.
Oh, that's a nice tradition.
Now we wave our hands over both pots like this. Wave your hands. And say, glad to be here in the presence of my friend Lou with my new friends the Potts.
Okay, glad to be here in the presence of my friend Lou and my new friends the Potts.
That was excellent. What's that? Oh, they said, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
The pleasure is all ours. We sincerely hope we are pleasing you and your interesting friend Lou.
Oh, that's very nice of them.
Yes, these are Japanese and Canadian teapots.
Oh, okay. So what's that writing on the side say?
Oh, it says, Go Leafs, go.
Oh, not the Canadian one.
Oh, I have no idea. Somebody told me it was the kanji for fathead.
Butchie told you that.
Yeah. Anyway, now we pour the tea.
I don't want to tell you how to do your own ceremony, but shouldn't you add the actual tea first?
No, that is just for casual drinking. This is a subtle affair. We are engaged in kinetic poetry, in action art, in ritual, steeped in meaning and in hot water. So I pour the cup. Don't pick it up yet. I pour mine. And now we wait.
For what?
Hard to say. I think we'll recognize it when we see it. I haven't messed up yet.
What's the nature of the thing we're waiting for?
What's the one thing you value above all else?
Oh, man, that's a heavy question.
Take a stab.
Okay. Oh, never say that to Butchie, by the way. I guess the opportunities to interact with those I love and to meet new people and find new connections. I guess connecting, relating, being with, if that makes sense.
It totally does.
And you?
Oh, hey, I asked the questions here.
Oh, sorry.
I'm kidding. It's the same. I love being with my friends and just experiencing these moments together, focusing on one another.
So now what?
No idea.
You just made all this up now, didn't you?
I did. But I just wanted to hang out with you, and this seemed like a fun excuse to do something together that neither of us have done before, to be creative together, and to just be in the dang moment.
Here, Lou. Can I have some of that hot water? My throat's a little dry.
Sure. Would you like some nutmeg on that?
No, just the water. All right. Here's to excuses to be with one another.
Cheers, awesome friend.
I'm pulling you over on the highway. I'm delaying you at the border. I'm cornering you at a wedding, like the Ancient Mariner. I'm having you to dinner with just one other person. I'm recruiting you to clean the church parking lot this weekend. I'm approaching you at the grocery store to ask you if you dropped this dollar, even though I know you didn't. I'm sitting next to you at the movie theater, even though there's plenty of free seats. Let's have coffee and donuts. Let's have green tea over rice. Let's have Japanese 7-Eleven egg salad sandwiches. Let's have a basket of crackers. Any of this defeats the spaces and distance the universe insists on putting between us. This wrecks the fences that confine us to our fields. Simple acts reunite souls that always knew they'd been torn apart. The look of recognition in our eyes when we both reach for the same donut, the same cracker, justify our excuses to be together.
Hi there.
Hello.
Do you have enough room?
Yes, thank you.
I like your bag.
Oh, Thank you.
May I ask where you got it?
Tokyo.
Can I ask what store?
Oh, sure. Tokyo Hands, I think.
Cool. I hope I get to go there one day. My friend makes me watch a lot of Ozu films, so I'm super interested in going to Japan in the 1950s.
I beg your pardon?
No, we don't have a time machine. I meant to go to Tokyo in the present.
Yes, that's a good time to go.
No time like the present.
Yes, literally.
Yeah, what do you mean?
I mean that the past and the present are sort of illusory, aren't they? The present seems real, the past seems like a dream, and the future, it's always just out of sight. You never get there. It transforms when you do catch it.
It's just the present with its invisibility cloak on.
Oh, very good.
Thanks. I think a lot about time. Sorry I'm so chatty. I just really like meeting people.
Ah, that's sweet. I'm gonna read now, okay?
Oh, of course. Nice chatting with you.
Likewise.
I know what you're thinking. I mean, I know what I'm thinking. I mean, I tell myself I know what I'm thinking. And that is that this is not an art movement. You're just saying anything can be art.
No, I'm not.
I'm saying this. The heap paradox, like many, is a paradox not because the universe is imprecise, but because language is imprecise and vague. And language is imprecise and vague because our perceptions are imprecise and vague. A house is always more or less a house. A mountain is mostly a mountain or mountain-ish. Precision is possible only in a static universe. But we live in a swirling, changing river of mysteries and hidden meanings.
So I'm going for a walk. I had to get out of the house for a little bit. Not to clear my head, but to fill it. I'm a picker. Not the kind that drive around and take things from people's piles of discarded furniture and appliances or something from the side of the road, but I'm an idea picker. I look around for things to stimulate me, to make me think of something that I haven't thought before, to surprise me. Maybe it's a combination of things. Things that don't quite go together, you know, that defy your expectations. That's what I'm doing. I'm out here having my expectations defied. I do a show every week, you know. It's got to be done, regardless whether I'm inspired or have an idea or not. Every week, I have to make a new show. It'd be nice to have a year. I could really craft something then. But every week, I have to stop at some point and say, this is good enough. I wish I knew who said it, but someone said, a poem is never finished, it's abandoned. That's what I feel like. I feel like I start things and I abandon them. They're always imperfect. I have to put them out anyway. I've gotten very used to imperfection. I've even fallen in love with it. So, it doesn't bother me that things might come out a little cruder or a little less sophisticated or clever than I would like. But it's done. And the moment is what requires it to be done. It's time. It's needed now. We need you now, Hardy. Not in the future when you're ready. No one's ever really ready. And so that's what my art movement is about. Throwing everything out there. Just consistently. So you can see if there's something you want. So you can pick through it. Yeah. Today, not much going on. I gotta tell you. I'm looking around. It's kind of a gray day. Occasionally I get rewarded, you know. A hawk will swoop down and grab a chipmunk or something. But see, today I'm expecting that. So So I think that the universe knows not to have that happen. Perhaps it's surprising me with its lack of excitement. It knows that if it's real still, I might not see anything. But I go out looking anyway. Yeah, I think I've accidentally cleared my head. That's all right. It makes room for new stuff. Have to do that anyway. Fill it up. It's like a garage. If you are a picker, you can only accumulate so much stuff. You got to keep it in circulation. That's what you really have to do. Bring your ideas in. Get rid of them as soon as possible.
So, friends, I have brought you a big pile of useless things. Did you ever have a relative come over with a big bag of clothes or something? And they say, yes, I've been cleaning out the house and I found all this. I don't know if any of it is useful to you, but I brought it over. Do not feel compelled or obligated to take any of it. Just throw it away if you don't want it. Pass it on if you don't want it. Keep what you want, but I just want it out of my house and I'm giving it to you. I wonder if that bag of clothes just gets passed around, though. You know, oh, I don't want anything in it, and you give it to someone else. It could go around forever with anybody, without anybody ever taking anything out of it. I wonder how long the longest bag of discarded clothes has been in circulation. It'd be wonderful if there was still one going around from the 18th century. Somebody in 1780s cleaned out their closet and passed it around, and it arrives on your doorstep, and you say, hey, this powdered wig might come in handy, but all the frilly stuff on the coats looks like it's been eaten by bugs. But the bugs are in there. Oh, and I can use them. The bug carcasses are worth a lot because the year is 2815, and now insect exoskeletons are a means of currency. So we do that. I'm keeping all my old cockroaches just in case. Say, where are you? I say, oh, I'm collecting roaches. And I put them in old film cases. You know where I got that idea? Drugs. But I'll tell you what, I'm giving you my ideas for free. I need them out of my head. Hey, eventually my head is going to rot and they're going to put it in the ground or something or burn it up. So I might as well clean it out. I like it clean anyway. It's like my home. I like to accumulate things and I like to collect objects. But eventually they run their course, you know, and say, do I really still need this? It's amazing how many decades that I've told myself that I really still need my K-Tel compilations that I bought when I was a kid, you know. It's like, I don't know, you know, fun rock or something. What am I going to, I don't want to get rid of that, really. I might need it for something. And so I keep them around, but other things no longer interest me. Dated clothing, but you know, some of it comes back if you keep it long enough. I wonder if ideas are like that. Yes, they are, unfortunately. There's some horrid old ideas that we thought we had banished from the earth that keep coming back, I guess because people stick them in bags and pass them on to relatives. I really don't know how that works. But I know that I have been giving you things, I hope not burdening you, again. There's no obligation to keep anything. I am not under the illusion that what I give you is necessarily valuable. Maybe if I charged for it. They always say that, you know, when you give things away, if things are free, people think they have no value. That even if they don't have any real value, you should give them a price tag because that'll convince people it's worth something. It's funny. You know, my grandfather used to say, something's only worth what somebody will pay for it. So you don't know the real worth of something until you sell it, and then it's gone. So do you really want to do that? Do you really want to get rid of something just to find out how much it was worth? Just hang on to it. Think about that. If you had fine art, you have a Picasso hanging in your, scratch that, you have an Alice Neal hanging in your living room. You go, I love this Alice Neal portrait. And someone comes by and you go, no, I think this is worth a lot of money. And you say, how much? And they say, oh, I don't know, because this hasn't been at auction. If you put it at auction, you say, well, I don't want to get rid of it. So what is it worth now? Nothing? Priceless? Weird, right? What is worth? Well, to me, it's worth a lot. But I know in the grand scheme of things that it too is merely an object.
And that feeling I'm getting is just a product of a brain, Alice's brain. And she put it in some kind of form. She quantified it, let's say. Put it in the form of a recipe, almost. And then when I look at that painting, maybe I get the feeling that she had. And there it is, transferred from the artist to me through this piece of art. Now, does the art have to be very good to transfer an idea or a feeling? I wonder. I wonder if that's the measure of a good piece of art or a good expression, that it accurately conveys something. Because I tell you, I've looked at the most ordinary things. I have looked at paintings at a thrift store or something and felt not a condescension or that kind of thing. I was like, look at this silly painting of a clown that some idiot did. I bet he thought it was good. Not like that. But some feeling, there's some sincerity in a thing that someone put effort into. They had something to say, maybe, or maybe they were simply enthralled with the materials. They discovered painting. They discovered that they could combine colors and make pictures. Children do this and are immediately drawn to it, and we don't expect anything from them. And then their art is always kind of transcendent, and we're surprised. They have, look, they're working within their skill set. If they had more skills, imagine what they could do. But I always thought this, life is so short. If I wait until I have skills, I may never express myself. If I wait until I can paint like Alice Neal, I may never paint anything. And then all those ideas that I may have, will they die with me? I got to get them out somehow. Even though that conveyance may be imperfect, even though I'm getting them out willy-nilly in a messy and not pretty fashion. I don't want to say ugly. But you know, there's ugly art. There's repulsive things that move us and make us feel things. So the beauty of a thing or the skill of a thing sometimes has only a little bit to do with what its power is.
Oh, I hope my funny, silly words fall upon your ears with some worth.
They're building a wall outside my window right now. There's fellas out there, three of them, and they're putting together stones in the form of a wall. And it really is a beautiful thing. And it's a created thing, and it takes some skill, and they're measuring and they're using their eyes, and they have an aesthetic. This needs to be straight. This needs to look a certain way. Neat, precise, beautiful. And so they were doing a sort of art. When we called them artisans. I don't know what that's. I always find that a little bit, you know, how is it? Oh, I'm a cheese artisan. All right. So you're saying cheese is not art? No, it's just a food. I don't know. I've watched people make it. And I think it goes through all the same stages as if you were creating an etching or something like that. There's ways to do things. You put it together. And just because you eat it doesn't mean anything. You could eat a painting. I had a friend that used to make art out of toast. He would block off certain parts of the bread and heat certain parts so that the burn marks would make a picture. And you could conceivably eat it. And they often were eaten. All his portraits, I think, are gone because, as you know, there are tiny things that also like to eat. And one of their favorite things to do is to eat art. Oh, tiny little things eat clothing. Tiny little things eat paintings. Tiny little things would eat the Statue of David if they could. Oh, time eats away at things. It's going to eat away at this wall. I used to visit a town in France called Arles. It's called Arles. And you may know it from Vincent van Gogh, who lived in Arles there and painted Arles. Many pictures of it. His room in Arles is a very famous painting. And he also painted an old Roman cemetery called Les Alicants. The cypress there. Cypress, these long, skinny trees that in Europe indicate it's a cemetery or a rich person's house, which is certainly almost the same thing.
And I would go to this old Roman cemetery. It's not just Roman people buried there, because it existed for hundreds of years, and classy people thought, I want to be buried in this Roman cemetery near Hilarius Anus and all these famous Romans and all like that. So it became a very popular place. Now, there's no more room left there, so now you just wander around like a tourist through the chapel looking at these old graves and thinking, I wonder if Vincent walked in the same place that I'm walking. And then I think, no, because the dirt's different. The dirt would have been different. So his feet would not have touched the same. This is literally different dirt. The dirt he was walking on, some of it blew away, some of it's buried, but I doubt it's the same. He's not even looking at the same cemetery. I've gone back in time to check with him. And he was an interesting man. Very difficult to speak with, but that's all right. I had some questions. I asked. I moved on. Arl. It's got a lot of Roman ruins, too. Has a whole, arena. And the arena is still there. But, you know, even the stones are affected by time. So when I look at this wall that these fellows are making, I want to laugh a bit and say, do you really think this is going to be here in a couple hundred years? Well, first of all, they'll demolish my house way before then, I'm sure, because they're going to have to put in, we'll all live in space condos or something. So these old mid-century modern suburban homes will be all gone anyway. And where will the stones go? Will they be crushed into gravel? Is the gravel in my driveway? Is that the crushed stones of Roman ruins? I'm going to go say no, because I live in Kentucky. I don't know that the Romans were here. I mean, we have a lot of immigrant families come in, open restaurants and everything, but none of them are ancient Romans, and that's very disappointing to me. However, I don't know that I would be fond of garum. Garum, the favorite condiment of ancient Rome. If you lived back then and you wanted some garum, what is garum? Garum is fermented fish sauce. You take guts, you put them in a jar, you wait till it ferments, and then you flavor your food with it. I don't know. I mean, I like Thai fish sauce and everything. I put that. But this might have been stronger. Who knows? But it was the ketchup of its day. And Pompeii was one of those places where they'd make garum. Pompeii, the Boca Raton of the ancient world, right there on the water. I don't know that Boca has a volcano. I don't want to scare anybody down there and say, oh, I'm moving to Delray Beach because I heard there's the Boca Raton volcano. No, I don't know that that's true. But what happened to Pompeii? It got buried. And is that because of their taste in condiments? No, it's not. But all things shall pass, all things shall pass away, said George Harrison, who then, not ironically, passed away. Not immediately after that. But, you know, after a while. Too soon. But still, everyone goes. There's a child's book called Everyone Poops. Everyone poops. Very good. Everyone dies. How about that? That's so sad. I mean, is it, though? It's never not happened to anyone. It's never not happened to any creature. It's never not happened to any tree. And yet, it's still the worst thing in the world. That's our biology. We're a slave to it. Oh, there's nothing worse than dying, except for living under certain circumstances. So it's not dying that's so bad. It's that fear of knowing that it'll be over. It's living in the temporary. I mean, that's what scares the heck out of me. Because I feel like my whole body is saying, survive, survive. It doesn't know why, but that's what I'm telling myself. Keep going, keep going, keep going. And I'm inclined to think it's because I know that at some point I'm going to be having dinner with my friends or something. I still think back. I was up for the WFMU marathon one year. And I went out to get to eat with some folks, and I'll never forget it, except now I'm trying to think who was there. Oh, I'm going to forget somebody who was there. But it was a bunch of people from FM. I don't want to start naming names because, like, I will omit somebody, and then they'll think that they're not in my memory and I don't remember it, but
In my memory, they're just a vague cloud of joy, so I don't know who it was exactly. But I was sitting there and I thought, this is so ordinary, and we're not talking about anything in particular, but I know that this is a rare moment, and these are people I don't get to see very often because of the distance between us physically. And my heart felt so big. This was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I can't forget it. And I go back there in my memory. I'll be laying in bed trying to go to sleep. And I always dredge up. That sounds like it's going to be bad. You can dredge up good things. You can dredge up gold doubloons. But I'll remember certain things. Some of them are really mundane, like train rides. I'll imagine I'm on a train looking out the window, and that helps me fall asleep. Or I imagine I'm sitting there having a hamburger with Pat Byrne, and then I'll fall asleep. Not because I'm bored, just because I'm content. All right? But, boy, those moments I like. And it seems to me that the universe has given them to me like a bag of old clothes. It's saying, here, take what you want. I don't know what you need. I'm just going to throw everything out there. Oh, I love possibilities. I love Swiss Army knives. Now, I've had a Swiss Army. I don't know where I've misplaced it, but I had a Swiss Army knife. And I mainly use the primary blade, to be honest with you. Rarely use the scissors. Because I don't know, there's not a lot of jobs where a knife can't do what scissors can. Tweezers, never. Toothpick, I might have used it for something off-label. I highly doubt that I picked my teeth with it. But I know I don't think I ever used it. I didn't use a little saw. So I had all these possibilities. Turned out I only needed one of them, but I didn't know that when I bought it. Who knows? I might have needed a screwdriver. Literally, I don't mean to. I love Swiss Army knives, but I really think the primary blade could probably do everybody else's job. And that's the way. Isn't that way with a lot of workplaces? But I still love it because maybe there is some jobs that a big blade can't do that you need a tiny little plastic stick. Didn't happen for me, but it might happen for you. Friends, am I some kind of Swiss Army knife on the radio? Am I offering you so many variations that one of them's got a stick? Hey, I don't care for that Hardy guy, but he said something. He said something that triggered an idea. Boy, it could be anything. I've gotten ideas off of commercials on the radio, people yelling something on the side of the street. The last time I was in San Francisco, there was a fellow behind me. And he yelled, he did this. He went, Chinese, like that. And I don't know why that, first of all, frightened me. But second of all, It stimulated some ideas. And I started to think. And I don't think he was yelling at me. And I don't think he meant to make scary pirate sounds and then yell. He yelled some more horribly racist things after that. But that's not. It was the initial non sequitur that really got. He just went growl, mumble, mumble, Chinese. And I didn't associate it with anything. Except I thought he was just, maybe it was a surrealist poem or something. As I said, he went on to bitterly expound on his twisted ideas about other human beings. But before that, I think I had something there. Like when you pick out a jacket or something at the used clothing store and you say, this is amazing, and then you turn it on and there's a big stain on it. And you go, well, it was kind of amazing, but it does give me this idea. I'm going to look for this style jacket from now on. That's what it does. So maybe Hardy is speaking to you and he's saying some things. And you say, well, I'm not going to get it from Hardy, but I'm going to go read up on this heat paradox. I'm going to go read up on some other things he's been talking about. I might go look into art movements. I think that when he was playing around with sort of art documentary formats, I might go watch me some. And then you do. And that one thing might lead to another. And I don't want credit for it, but it all started with me, didn't it? But it could have been anything, and it could have been anybody. The thing that makes me different is I'm conscious of the fact that I'm just putting it all out there. I can't make it as precise as that. I am a single person. So in 1 week, what you're hearing is the things a single individual has thought. And those are never going to be the same as a group effort. Put a lot of minds together, and you know the amazing things that can happen. You put one person in a room, and you can see the quirkiness. You can see what they've done with limitations. And I think that's interesting, too. I love things that are done well and beautifully and perfect and consistently. But I also love things that are rough around the edges. I love things that are done for the moment. I love things that are done with limitations. I love hand-painted signs by people who can't paint. I love solutions to problems made without resources or money, just ingenuity. Things cobbled together. Things made with tape and spirit and string and hope. That's what I like. And that's what I'm hoping to give you, is this crude thing I've made. I remember meeting a fella. This buddy of mine said, I met this eccentric individual. He's an old man who lives by himself, and he invents things. He's an inventor. And I went, oh my gosh, he's an inventor. Yes. So I went to this guy's house with my friend, and he says, he's invented all these things. He's invented a channel changer. And I said, well, that's interesting. We already have a channel changer for the television. But this guy's channel changer was mechanical. It's so he could sit on the couch, and he had a device that he could actually flip. It's when you had the knob on the TV. He could flip the knob on the TV with this giant grippy stick he'd made. It was a channel changer. He could also grip the volume knob from a good distance away from the television without getting out of his seat. Now, my friend called him an inventor, and he had made a device. He made a tool. And yes, it was original, and it wasn't the solution that I expected, but he invented it, and it made me think. And what did it do? It lodged in my brain. It lodged in my brain, and it became a story. And I told you the story, and something might happen now. It might be the seed for something else. You know, you can plant a seed and it might come up vegetables and it might come up a weed, but they both have purposes and they're both going to do something. And it's exciting to see what happens. Oh, I'm making inventions for you. No, they are not sophisticated. Yes, they are idiosyncratic. Because I've made them. And in sort of isolation, with only my thoughts and my memories of my friends. Oh, I love that you're out there with me. You're part of an art movement. You don't even know it. Especially if you make things, and I don't mean sophisticated, even make dinner. Come on. Now, I know that you can't go around calling yourself a poet or an artist, because if you run into somebody with a PhD, they're going to be angry with you. You are no poet. Where did you get your graduate degree from? What university? Where have you been published? So, no, I'm trying to be. Well, you're not there yet. Here's the thing, though. I'm afraid my life is short and that I might not get to be a poet. And I've been writing poems. So exactly what do I have to do? I've been painting paintings. I might not get to the point where I'm a good artist. I might not get to the point where I'm universally acclaimed. Should I stop? I don't know. It gives me joy. Well, that's not entirely true. Sometimes it gives me pain. But there's something that compels me to do it. Do I stop? I promise not to label myself anymore. If you don't want me to call myself something, I won't do it. I'll just say that I write things down. I put words together, or I
make marks on paper or something. Is that okay?
Oh, no, I'm no musician. I just like to combine tones and sounds and surprise myself. It doesn't surprise everybody. Sometimes when I'll play it for someone else, they'll say, well, no, that doesn't surprise me. That sounds like a dull thing I've heard before. Very good, then. But some other people it works for.
I'm not sure if that's bad. I've never been sure if that's bad. I know that skill is wonderful. I like to see people who have skills and the degree of surprise that you can receive from something that is executed so well and with such skill and insight and feeling that you can't imagine that a human being could be even capable of that. I love that. That's transcendent. That's at the top of the heap. That's a heap for sure. But there's stuff all around the edges that may or may not be heaps, because they give me a little bit of that at least, and I'm reluctant to say they aren't a beautiful piece of art. Maybe they are. Maybe what I'm doing is nonsense. I think about that. And I don't know that it's pure nonsense, but there's nonsense mixed into it. It's contaminated. That's what it is. What I'm giving you is just not the pure stuff. It's all mixed up. It's messy. You're going to have to pick through it. I'm sorry. It's like those, is it a TV show where you buy a rental unit and say, well, you're gonna bid on what, you don't know what's in there, but it's just like a Monty Hall thing. You're gonna get what's in there. It may or may not be good. You may find something in there, but there's just that wonderful process of looking. And I want to be your abandoned storage unit. Hardy is my abandoned storage unit. Every week I go there and I open that door and I don't know what's going to be in there. I open up that trunk and it could be Rosenthal china or an old porno mag collection. I really don't know. And I know I'm pulling for one and not the other. Friends, let me thank you.
For what?
I've been tricking you. In the same way that Lou tricked me to have a tea ceremony with him. He said, sit down, I got a tea ceremony. Now, I might not have just sat down if Lou said, come on, can we chit-chat? I was like, oh, I don't have time. But he lured me. He lured me in with something. It seemed like a tea ceremony. It seemed like I was going to experience something a little bit transcendent. And so I participated. And then it turned out to just be Lou wanting to be with me. And that was better than any tea ceremony could be. And so I am tricking you. It's on the radio. It says it's a show. So I turn it on, and I think I'm going to get an entertaining show like I do when I listen to the podcast that tell me about people who have committed crimes who may not have committed crimes, and they go into a lot of detail, or maybe there's other podcasts about what music I should listen to or not listen to, what movies are good or not good, or maybe they're just fellas sitting around making each other laugh. Nothing like that, boy, I tell you, just, you know, two guys sitting at a table laughing a lot. I don't know. It could help you. But I trick you. You think that's what you're going to get. And then you get in there and it's just some babbling madman. But you sit there for a few minutes anyway, because you don't want to feel foolish. Say, well, you know, I'm here now, and I feel bad just getting up and going because there's nobody really here. I've done that. You know, you show up at some kind of small film or something, and you sit down and you go, oh, dang it, there's three people. I cannot leave, because it's just going to, everybody's going to watch me leave, and it's going to be a hurtful insult, because it is a hurtful insult. And so I guess I'm going to watch it. And so you continue to listen. I'm going to listen to Hardy. And then I accidentally say something that helps you or makes you feel better, or gives you an idea. And that's okay with me. If I write a poem for you that's meant to make you feel sentimental about the forest, and instead it makes you laugh at my sentimentality and lack of sophistication, I'll take it. I made you laugh. That ain't easy. Ask any comedian. Is it easy to make people laugh?
And then they won't answer for a while because they're thinking of something funny to say because they're self-conscious and tortured. But then they will. And they will say, you know, yes, it is hard to make people laugh. It's very difficult. Why? Because it's hard to surprise them. So the more they go on, the more they see. And it's hard to surprise people. I'm coming in. I'm not saying any words anymore. That's because we're nearing the end of our time together. And the little key in my back is unwinding and it's going a little bit more slowly. I do have a big spring in me. And it gets wound up and then it winds down. And I say, I got to go and I got to get more tea or something because I'm winding down now. I love it. I love winding down with you, my friend. Do you like winding down with me? Do you like WFMU? Oh, you know what? You ought to help us out during this October fundraiser. We're getting to go over there and click and say, oh, I love Hardy White so much. Here's a dollar bill. That's good. So just remind you to do that. I'll see your name and I'll thank you either literally or deep inside or something like that. Oh, the continuation of this radio station is its own reward, but we still like to be thanked, don't we? So I'll try to remember to do that. Does gratitude matter if you don't express it? I wonder. That's why I try to express it even when I'm not thinking it, because I want to make sure I don't take my gratitude to the grave with me. I don't want to let anything be unsaid, really. Because once I'm dead, I don't think I'll be as self-conscious, probably. And I'll probably be unburdened by embarrassment. And I would like to cash in on some of that now. I'd like now to be unself-conscious and unburdened by embarrassment. I'd like now to not feel judged. I'd like now to know that I'm not risking ostracism by exposing my imperfections and my lack of knowledge or wit or cleverness or something like that. I'm letting you see everything on the cutting room floor, my friend. Look at my studio. Watch me make things. Everything is open for possibilities. Everything I want to share with you, just in case it works. Just in case it's what you need. Thank you so much for listening today and every day that I've been on this fabulous, fabulous radio station. This blessing, this miracle. I call the show Miracle Nutrition, but they ought to call the M and WFMU stands for Miracle. Does it? Does it? My friends, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, New York, and Rockland County, New York, where miracles happen sporadically and one big one coming up, and WFMU.org online worldwide, the way that I connect with all my friends and siblings around the globe. And what a great globe it is, this heap of stuff, of people and mountains and oceans and deserts and forests and lions and bacteria and single-cell organisms and ice. So glad to be alive at the same time as you, my friend. I realize how creepy that would be if I'm already dead and you're listening to a archived version of this.
You're not alive at the same time as me.
I'm so glad to be alive at the same time as your parents, future friend.
All right, fair enough.
All right, fair enough. Hey, thank you for joining me. Don't go anywhere. More tremendous programming coming up now. And I tell you, I don't know you, but I hope I love you. And I hope that I've given you something you can use. Feel free to pass on what you don't want or just throw it away. And I'll see you again next week.
I was standing at the cross. This is my life.